Well, we're beginning our new series for Lent, this journey to Easter that we're beginning, and we're talking about God's response to us and our response to God. And we're taking stories from Luke and Acts. So Luke and Acts were written by Luke as one long narrative, the gospel and then the things that happened after Jesus' death and resurrection. And we're starting with this very strange story about Jesus on the way to Jerusalem, hearing about Herod and then having a lament over Jerusalem. And in order to explain it tonight, I thought what I'd do is three things. I'd talk about the context of this in Luke's gospel. Then I'll talk about the meaning of the story in its two parts. And then I'll talk about what we can learn from that. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time just putting it into context, perhaps my own personal view of the context from Luke's gospel, so we can unpack this story a little bit better. For somebody who's basically a science nerd and whose normal reaction to stories is very analytical, I think about what they mean and what they're trying to tell me, one of the things I find about Luke's gospel is that it moves me quite a lot. And particularly the stories that are unique to Luke. For instance, at the very end in chapter 24, there's a story of the two disciples on the Emmaus Road. You might remember it after the death of Jesus, when they hadn't discovered that he'd been raised, the two disciples, it says that they're downcast, their faces are downcast, and they're walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and they're sad. And Jesus joins them, and unbeknownst to them, he starts telling them that things are okay and that Jesus had to die. And I remember that the excitement that when they realize who he is, suddenly they perk up and they say, didn't our hearts burn within us when he opened the scriptures to us? And they turn from this slow trudging walk that they've had all the way to Emmaus and run back to Jerusalem and share their exciting news. So it's there right at the end. But even at the beginning, we have the story of the angel appearing to Mary, again, only in Luke's gospel. And Mary, you can imagine a young girl being told by an angel of God that she's about to give birth, even though she's not married, never had sex. She's about to bear the Son of the Most High. And it says that she's overwhelmed with what goes on. But how does she respond? She responds and says, I'm God's servant, and then starts this magnificent song, the Magnificat, my soul magnifies the Lord. There's this great stories of hope and a great stories of transformation that are there in Luke's gospel. And it's good news. The Gospel of Luke is often called the Gospel to the outcast. People who are lost are being found by the mission of Jesus. God is reaching out in Jesus and finding those who are lost and helpless. And it goes from the poorest of the poor, the shepherds in the field that we know about from Christmas, who are the poorest in society, and yet the angel appears to them first of all and foremost of all the people to be to have the birth of Jesus announced. And as the angel stands there in the field, again you get this sense of terror that the angels would appear to these poor shepherds and tell them something exciting, and that terror transforms to joy when they race off to Bethlehem and see the baby. Or, so we see the gospel preached to the poor, but we also see the gospel preached to the rich. In Luke 19, there's a story of Zacchaeus, who is an incredibly rich man, a tax collector, a chief tax collector, and who desperately wants to see Jesus, who's rejected by all of society, everybody around him hates him because he's a tax collector working for the Romans, but he wants to see Jesus. And you have this great story of Zacchaeus, who was a small man up a tree, and Jesus, as he comes through town, stops at the tree and looks up and says, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house to have dinner with you tonight. And at the end of that, there's this very famous Luke 19, verse 10, says, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. So this is Luke's gospel, full of these stories that are incredibly moving about the way that God is interacting with people. And perhaps a pinnacle of these for me is Luke 15, the story of the lost son, the prodigal son. Now, we're actually going to talk about that in a couple of weeks' time, so I'm stealing somebody's thunder by talking about it now. But to me, it's one of those great stories of Luke's gospel that just captures the heart of God really well. The son who's asked for his father's inheritance early, before the father's even dead, has gone off and wasted all that money elsewhere and is now coming back after losing all that money, coming back in deep, deep shame, hoping for some acceptance from his father. And I love the way that the story says that the father is waiting at the gate, and as soon as he sees the son coming, he runs out to him, puts his arm around him, puts his coat around him, and says, "This is my son whom I've lost and who's come back to me. Let's celebrate." And one of the things I like to do with that story in particular is I imagine that as the son gets held to his father's chest, you can hear the father's heart beating. The father is just run out with exertion to meet the son. He's raced out because he's so excited about the son. And you can hear his heart beating as he's made that effort to run out and join the son. And you can also hear that heart beating with that heart that's been longing to see the son returned, beating now with joy that the son has come back. And I imagine that to be the heart of God, that heart of God that beats with exertion to go and reach out to seek and save the lost, and reach out with longing and with joy when that union with God is created. And to me, that's a bit of an analogy for all of Luke's gospel, that we see again and again and again in these stories throughout Luke's gospel, the beating heart of God, that heart of God that reaches out to people that will make an effort to actually reach people and is overjoyed when union with people happens. So I think of reading Luke's gospel as sort of hearing the heartbeat of God in this sort of way. Well, what does that have to do with this story? Well, this story, which is, I think, a bit of a strange story, has two parts to it. And the first part of it is a warning about Herod. Let me read the first part again. At that time, some Pharisees came to Jesus and said to him, "Leave this place and go somewhere else. Herod wants to kill you." He replied, "Go tell that fox. I will keep on driving out demons and healing people today and tomorrow, and on the third day I will reach my goal. In any case, I must press on today and tomorrow and the next day, for surely no prophet can die outside of Jerusalem." Now, this story is set in Luke's gospel on Jesus' journey to Jerusalem. After the transfiguration that we talked about last week, soon after that, Luke's gospel says Jesus resolutely set his face towards Jerusalem. He set out on a journey to Jerusalem where he knows he's going to die. He's had this fantastic ministry in Galilee. He's been driving out demons and he's been healing people and he's been teaching, and large crowds of people have gathered around. But now he knows that things are changing and he's going to head towards Jerusalem, where he knows he's going to be handed over to the authorities, is going to suffer and die, and he starts to talk about this on the way. So already in this time, as Jesus is marching down the road to Jerusalem, continuing his teaching, continuing his healing, and now starting to teach the disciples about what's going to happen, we've already got this somber mood happening. We've already got this sense that the early excitement is changing into something that is much darker, much harder for Jesus to cope with. And suddenly into this we have message from Herod, saying that a message from the Pharisees coming in saying, Herod, who's killed John the Baptist, who's arrested and killed John the Baptist at the very beginning of Jesus' ministry, is now taking notice of Jesus and is coming after Jesus. And the Pharisees are saying, be afraid, you better get out of here because Herod's on the warpath and is coming to kill you. I reckon we can understand what that's like as we've moved from, you know, one disaster to the next, from bushfires to COVID phase one to COVID phase two to floods to whatever's coming next. We have that sense of, you know, something, we're just getting coping with the way things are when something comes in from left field and you wonder what's going on. And I imagine that Jesus is having that sort of experience now. He knows that things are pretty tough already. He's heading on a new path that is a difficult one for him, and suddenly there's this other thing that comes in and just loads him up, another fear to worry about. But what does Jesus do? Jesus' response is that he's going to press on. He's going to press on with the mission that God has given him. He's going to continue to do the things that he's been doing. He's going to continue to heal. He's going to continue to drive out demons. He's going to continue this day and the next and the next. And he's going to continue on that path to Jerusalem. And it actually doesn't matter what Herod does. Herod is not a big player in this game, in this story. He's just going to ignore him, set him aside, and march on. And this is where I think we see the sort of the heartbeat of God in that sense of exertion. Like a cyclist cycling up a steep hill where you have to put off all the doubts and fears as your heart is beating in your ears trying to reach the top, but being determined to reach the top and keep going. We have that sense that Jesus is just going to keep on with that mission that God has placed before him. He's going to keep on going. He knows he's on the path. He's going to keep exerting himself. He's going to keep marching down that path no matter what, because he's got that commitment that is the heartbeat of God driving him on to the mission that he's given him, throwing off his doubts and fears and pressing on. And then we have the second part of the reading, which is the lament over Jerusalem. As Jesus is thinking about his destination, the thing that he is working towards, he has this lament. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather you, your children together, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were not willing. Look, your house is left to you desolate. I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Jerusalem, where he's heading, should be the place where God is heard most. Jerusalem is where the temple is. Jerusalem is the heart of the Jewish faith. It's where God is meant to be, at the centre of God's people, living there, where God should be heard all the time. And instead, Jesus is saying, Jerusalem, you are not who you should be. God sends you prophets, God sends you messengers, and you just kill them, you stone them, the messengers, you ignore God. And it's going to happen again. As Jesus goes as the Son of God into Jerusalem, he's going to be rejected, and the message that he brings is going to be ignored. And he's lamenting this. He's saying how terrible it is that this place that should be the place of God, that should be where the voice of God is heard, is suddenly going to reject even the Son. And how does he respond to that? You'd be thinking that he'd be going, I'm going to reject you altogether, Jerusalem. If you're so bad at hearing the voice of God, if you're so bad at receiving the people that God sends to you, then you should be judged and should be unworthy and should be destroyed. But instead, what does he respond? He said, how I've longed to gather your children together. How I've longed to come and protect you, your children, protect your people, gather them under my wings and draw them into safety and and the protection of God. We have this lovely image of a mother hen gathering her chicks under her wings and keeping them safe. And that's how God responds. And this is the other bit of the heartbeat of God, I think, that we see in this passage, that God is always yearning to bring people into relationship, into reconciliation. God is always wanting, no matter how hard they reject God, God is always trying to bring people close and protect them. And that doesn't save them. That doesn't change, even if people continually reject his messengers, reject the things that God is saying. And that's where I think we hear the beating of the heart of God, the mother hen, who's always wanting to protect and reach out. It's not going to be great for Jerusalem. It's not really going to be great for Jerusalem until they're able to turn around and recognize what Jesus is on about, until they realize that Jesus is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. But it never stops the desire of God to reach out and protect and hold safe. So here, I think, in this simple story, we see the beating heart of God in those two ways. Well, what do we learn from this? What does that mean for us today? I think there's two things that I'd point out. One is that the first one of those is, can we recognize God's heart beating for us? Can we recognize God's heart beating for us? Are there times when God seems far off? Are there times when God seems just distant and far away from us? Do we doubt that God is really committed to us? Do we really doubt that God's heart is yearning to connect with us? Nothing that we do will ever stop God being that yearning, that father looking out on the road, ready to run to his son. That mother hen, ready to try and gather the chicks together. No matter how you feel about things, you should never doubt God's desire to connect with you and to bring you into reconciliation. Or do we think perhaps that sometimes we've let God down, that we're not worthy to come into God's presence, that something that we've done, something that we've said, the way that we are, maybe we feel worthless and therefore not worthy to come into the presence of God. Is that something that keeps us from fostering and building our relationship with God? In those times, I think we need to hear the heart of God that beats like the mother hen, that says, no matter how much you've rejected me, Jerusalem, and no matter how many times you've killed my prophets and stoned the people I've sent to you, I'm still going to long for you and love you and want to come and protect you. And if you're in those times when you feel worthless, just remember that beating heart of God is always there, ready to calm, to protect, to comfort, and to help. Hold out for that love. Hold out for and wait for God to reveal that love to you. So, can we recognize God's heart beating for us? But the second thing is, can we recognize God's heart beating through us? Can we recognize God's heart beating through us as a message to the rest of the world? One of the great tragedies, I think, for me in the public perception of church over the last decade or more has been the sense that we're probably on about a couple of things. We're probably on about the fact that the rest of the world is unholy in some way or another, particularly about sex and sexual identity and other things, and because of this, you're unacceptable to God. And I think how tragic that is, that's a message that we portray to the world purporting to be people of God. And the second thing, which is like it, is that we spend our time in the public realm fighting for our opportunity to practice our religion without interference from others, as though we need all the protection and help, and what we're really on about is our rights and our ability to do what we want. Neither of those things, to me, represents the beating heart of God. Neither of those things represents God's yearning to reach out into the world, God's determination to reach out into the world with a message of hope and love that will comfort and protect. So I think for us, in a church that's not particularly like that, not interested in telling the rest of the world how bad they are, not interested in fighting for our rights to practice our religion. That's not what we're on about. How our message is one that resonates. We want to share the love and welcome of Jesus, and that is something that comes from the heart of who we are. There's an opportunity for us to be different, for us to really represent the beating heart of God for those around us, to go and talk to people in a way that says, you know what? God loves you. God is always yearning to connect with you. And it doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how bad you are. It doesn't stop God's heart beating for you. And in terms of us protecting ourselves, forget it. What we're really interested in is creating a space where you can meet God. We yearn to be a place where you can be yourself, come into contact with God, and know how much God wants to do for you, how much God loves you, and will have that same determination that drove Jesus to the cross on your behalf to bring you into reconciliation and life. And I think that's a fantastic opportunity for us to be different, to reach out with the beating heart of God and represent that to everybody around us that we come into contact with.